Are you Invictus? Clint, are you Invictus? Are you Invictus?
What does it mean?
You know, when I started the Invictus Mind podcast, my goal was to unite a bunch of people who had a similar ideology or a similar characteristic traits. Invictus means unconquerable. It's an old Greek word for means unconquerable.
Unconquerable.
So, honestly, it was a new concept to me. I had to Google it when you sent it to me. But yeah, I do my best.
Tell me about what the show, what is your audience looking for? Tell me.
This is your first time here. This is the number one program dedicated to helping individuals maximize their potential and truly become unconquerable. Here we have discussions about what it takes and what it means to experience and magnify political freedom, financial freedom, and spiritual freedom.
Yes, I would absolutely say that. I'm going to keep getting up, right? And I keep getting up and I keep pushing forward. And that's the type of mindset that you need to have.
I never lose hope. I never lose faith. My mindset has always been, if I want something, I don't give up.
So let me tell you what is the number one issue when it comes to being unconquerable.
Okay.
And the number one word you have to think about here is not intelligence, not savvy, not strength, none of those things. The number one thing is resilience.
You know I'm Invictus. Come on. All right. I'm Invictus AF.
Well, may I have an initiation question for my tribe?
Okay.
Are you Invictus?
I believe I am.
So yes, I agree. I am Invictus.
I totally agree, man. And I think that if there's anybody on this planet that's unconquerable, it's probably me. I am not the type to take orders, and I am definitely in a position that I can stand up for myself right now. So,
and I was like, no way, I know what that word means now.
yeah, man, very cool concept for a show.
You didn't ask me if I was Invictus.
Welcome back, everyone, to another exciting episode of the Invictus Mind podcast. This is your host, Mike Corbell, and I am grateful to be here. And if you can hear my voice or see my face because you're watching this on YouTube, then I'm grateful for that as well. This is the number one podcast where we talk about how to become unconquerable and live the lives of political freedom, financial freedom, and spiritual freedom. If this is your first time listening to the program, I do appreciate that. I do challenge you to go back and listen to a couple of our previous episodes so you get a good understanding about who we are doing. If you enjoy what you're hearing, then please leave me a review on whatever channel you happen to catch us on. This program is on just about every channel you can listen to. And of course, you can help our show grow by passing along with three of your friends and telling them what we're doing here. All right, before we get started, I want to once again give a plug to what has become my favorite podcasting tool, and that is podmatch.com. Podmatch is a great resource that connects podcast hosts to guests who have a message to share. And it's a great place to get exposure if you simply want to tell your story on a show like this one. I found my guest today on podmatch.com. And if you want to be featured on this show or others, then you can check out my affiliate link in the show notes. All right. So today I invited a young lady to share her story with us. In some way, it proves what I have suggested this age to be, and that's the apocalypse. Now, before everyone gets blackpilled and about the end of the world and fire and brimstone, I just want to explain what that means. Apocalypse just means revelation or revealing of something new. It means change or having the ability to see things in a new way. And I think that the events that have transpired since 2020, many of us have been able to see things in a different way. Some, of course, very good and some, of course, very bad. But I've heard many influencers and other podcasts suggest that since that time, their own worldview has changed. And my guest is here to tell us how her worldview has changed. She is a stay-at-home mother of two children. She's running a business of her own. She has a background in marketing and advertising. And recently she started a podcast after having what she calls a spiritual revival that awakened her to change many things in her life, ending a dangerous addiction, as well as giving her a new understanding of politics and information that we receive that often stifles our ability to make informed decisions. Her show is called The Recovering Liberal, and her name is Tamara Young. How are you doing today, Tamara?
Hi, Mike. I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing great. Great. I started off by saying that this is the apocalypse, and since 2020, I ask people what they think when I say that, and the world is changing. There's no doubt about it. I don't know if it's the end of the world, but it's definitely changing, and I think that your story inspired me to have you to share with us because some of the changes that you've gone through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you started off with a pretty piercing word there, apocalyptic.
Well, you know, people have different ideas about that, but you know, I found the name of your podcast intriguing, The Recovering Liberal. All right,
yes, now, it's a little provocative, isn't it?
Yeah, just as much as apocalypse is, right? And
yes,
so I don't strictly talk about politics on this show. I'm a recovering political person myself, but I've tended to generally speak more about spiritual matters too, just because of the events that transpired in 2020. I think I've had a new outlook on life. But I think before we get too much into your story, we had to set some definitions here.
Sure. Okay, so let's start.
The word liberal can mean often things. And so I'm just, when you say recovering liberal, what do you mean specifically about that?
So it started off as a little bit of an inside joke. A couple of friends threw that around and we joked. I said, don't you dare tell anybody I'm conservative. I'll deny it. but to me, liberal, to be quite honest, I mean, I'm 36 years old and I probably spent 34 of those years not really understanding what exactly it meant to be liberal. I really just had bought in up until a couple of years ago into a set of ideologies that I thought really aligned with my values. And it wasn't until really until I became a mom and had recovered from my own alcohol addiction and trauma and started to experience healing just in my family, my family of origin and in my family I'm creating right now, and healing in my health, just started to feel like I was kind of through accessing information and really developing a stomach really for truth, which I didn't have previously. I didn't have time for it. I didn't really have a stomach for it. Everything was very triggering to me. And so I really stopped at headlines. I stopped at, you know, what I think a lot of politicians expect us to do, which is I just see a headline or I see a narrative and I either buy in or I don't based on where I think I align ideologically. And I really started to, over the course of, you know, my medical journey and raising kids and trying to make health decisions for them, started to learn just more about how political influences really dictate my personal liberties and my ability to make decisions for myself and my ability to access the information I need to make those decisions. And I started to learn in that process. You know, I didn't wake up one day and go, you know, I think I'm not going to be a registered Democrat anymore. I really just slowly over time just started to go, wait, what is going on? And wait, these are the systems that dictate, you know, how this funnels into my life. And this is what's really going on. Liberalism isn't really what I thought I signed up for. I thought that it meant I'm a good person. That's what I thought being a liberal meant, is you care about people, you advocate for, you know, the marginalized, and you are interested in justice or interested in personal liberties and freedom. And I really became a little bit jaded when I started to just kind of open my eyes to corrupt practices. And a lot of that really aligns with my personal, just my recovery from addiction and trauma, as I mentioned, just because I had a lot of those ideas in my mind because I grew up in a very conservative, very religious environment that unfortunately was really wrapped up in a lot of abuse and violence and things that I no longer associate with God and faith and even a political party. But I really just, I think I threw out the baby with the bathwater for most of my life. I just wanted nothing to do with anything that really triggered those memories and, just the kind of set of things I thought were involved with being on any side of the aisle, on any spectrum of the aisle that wasn't far, far left. So that's how I arrived at The Recovering Liberal. And honestly, I chose the provocative title because I have a history that's really entrenched in people pleasing. And I made it my full-time job to try to be accepted and liked by everybody. And at the expense, you know, of just having my own identity, really. And I thought, you know, this political podcast, you know, if there's anything that gives people the opportunity to disagree with me or dislike me, it would be talking about politics. Mm-hmm. And so I figured, why not just talk about politics and also use this as just kind of a personal exercise in getting over kind of my people-pleasing nature and giving people the opportunity to disagree with me and even to dislike me or write me off. because I think that's people's rights too. But in the process, if I can kind of be open about the journey of changing my mind, which is, I think that, you know, a lot of people feel with big things like politics or religion or whatever it is, people feel like, you know, once you're in, and people tend to, even on both sides of the political aisle in the media, I see it all the time. You know, people kind of dig in their heels and they only say things and only kind of highlight narratives that are more kind of identified with their political party.
Sure.
I just set out to not do that and just to be me. I mean, I was telling a friend last week, I think that I have this weird theory that if we like made every American like go to political school and just do like a week of just education about here's how these systems work. Here's, you know, how the big nickel works, big insurance, big pharma. Here's how, you know, the financial sector operates. I would bet money, if I were a betting person, that most people would walk away from that neither staunchly Republican nor staunchly Democrat. I really think that each of us has our own individual unique opinions. And I'm very much an advocate for just using your God-given brain and your God-given gut instinct to make your own decisions.
Yeah, I like that you said about, you know, God-given brain and God-given, you know, decision-making ability, because in today's, I have a friend who he has a podcast, he calls it the Age of Information, although I might challenge him to change it to the Age of Misinformation, right?
Definitely. Because
that's really been a challenge for so many people, and it's really sad that, because, you know, that word liberal just really means choice, right? It gives us, obviously, the history of the United States is we all are supposed to be independent thinkers and have the freedom to choose our representatives, but we have not seen that since the beginning, right? So technically, we're not really a liberal society, right? We seem to be heavily authoritarian, and that comes from the left or from the right.
I think
more recently, we've seen it from the left, but, you know, it depends on, I guess, your point of view as to what that, you know, authoritarian comes from. But so a lot of people like myself have become libertarian, which, you know, to me is another word for liberal, libertarian, right? But since 2020, I've kind of shied away from that label too, because I think that even the libertarians themselves were blinded by many deceiving things that were in the news, that were in the media, that, you know, you can't tell what real truth is. You mentioned that word too, truth and information.
Yeah.
And so I think so many people have just been led astray. And so personally, me, I'm trying not to be political anymore because, you know, I don't know who to trust. I can't trust any of those people on the left or on the right. And, you know, I know politics is a driving force in today's society. I think that there's higher and better things to focus on.
Absolutely. And there is you're so right, because I feel like there is a trap that is inherent to a two-party system in a way, which is, you know, you start having conversations with people. And even if you're bringing information to light that's making them scratch their heads and go, I think there can be this inclination of like, well, what's the alternative? And I think that's how a lot of Americans are feeling these days, is like, well, if I let go of, you know, in my case, the Democrat Party, what is there to cling on to? I don't necessarily feel like this other option is representative fully of my desires and the ways that I want to live my life. But I think that that's a trap. I think it's okay to recognize that all of our options in some elections or in some situations, none of your options may be ideal. And it's still okay, I think, to seek the truth and to be able to hold like the risks and benefits of any given decision. I still think that truth is important, even if the truth leaves us a little bit confused as to where to go next.
Mm-hmm. Now, naturally, being a mother, you mentioned that starting a family and having children has changed many of your views. And you mentioned that you were a recovering alcoholic. And so obviously, having a new responsibility of a family, you wanted to nip that in the bud. And was it strictly because of that, or was it just a combination of having a new family and the events that transpired in 2020 that you said, you know what, this isn't working anymore? How did that go down for you?
Yes, to all of the above. Yeah. It was a combination of a lot of different factors, and I still can't pinpoint any one thing. I can pinpoint a conversation that I remember having with my husband, because look, I need to tell you, my husband when he and I were dating, I was still, I had tried to get sober for a couple of years, and I was in a brief period of time where I hadn't drank in a couple of months, which for me at the time was a miracle. That was, you know, I had a hard time going 2 days without drinking. I drank a handle of vodka every single day for a long time, which led me to, I also struggled with depression during that time, which probably doesn't come as a shock. Alcohol is a depressant. And severe alcoholism led me down a path of self-harm. I would self-harm when I got really intoxicated. And I had come off of a suicide attempt, unfortunately, and got better for a time. And I think it's all part of the journey, even though I had more to go through from there and it wasn't going to be my last drink. I met my husband during that time and I was doing, you know, okay. I was, like I said, it was kind of a good time of life. I was in a new relationship. I was 1 foot in, 1 foot out because you know, commitment has always been a problem. For what are kind of obvious reasons when you hear my story and where I come from. But I found out over the course of dating my husband that he voted for Trump, and the world, like my world came crashing down. And I thought, who is this monster that I'm dating? And I mean, I knew him and he was a great man, but I actually got physically, like I was shaking and I was just like trying to stay calm. I was like, it's okay. It's okay. But that's the level of triggering that political, something as political as somebody I know and really like and enjoy voted for Trump. What do I do with that information? Doesn't that mean that he is diabolically opposed to everything that I stand for? and he wasn't. Like, we had the irony is we had so many of the same values. We had similar ideas for how we wanted to raise a family. You know, some differences too. But like all in all, we really shared a lot of the same values. And I had, you know, back in, again, an active addiction. I remember the day after Trump was elected, I had voted for Hillary and I took off work the next day in mourning and I proceeded to get very, very drunk. So that's who God put together, was my husband and me. And I'm going to be very honest, when we got married, I thought, I'm going to change his mind. Like, I'm going to open his eyes and he's going to see like why, like how close-minded, how inflammatory. And I still hold some of those, you know, same beliefs about Trump. It's not like, you know, I'm cozying up to Trump now and wearing MAGA hats, but I have developed so much more understanding for where people are coming from and that a political decision is not so much about who they are as a person. It really doesn't. I know we like to put a high stake in what somebody's political affiliation means. But anyway, so about 2 months, I went away to treatment and sober living and all that. And at about 2 or 3 months sober, I found out I was pregnant with our first daughter. And the timing, it sounds insane. And it is kind of in a way insane because I was my recovery was really in its infancy. But I think thankfully by the grace of God, you know, that could have really ruined my sobriety and kind of sent me into a panic because any form of pressure is just another reason to drink, to be honest with you.
Sure.
But thankfully I had just all of the right people in my life, all of the right support. And I just put one foot in front of the other every day. I learned how to take care of myself for the first time in my life. You know, I would celebrate if I, you know, drank my water and went to a doctor's appointment without canceling it, you know, like little wins like that. And, we had our first daughter, in the pandemic, and the conversation that I pointed to earlier that I remember the very first time I went, wait a second, was when, my husband and I were talking about a story in the news and I saw it kind of in passing and I thought that can't be right. And it was that, the government was going to mandate vaccines, for all government employees. And I just remember thinking, wait, you lose your livelihood if you don't. And mind you, at that point in time, based on the information I had, my husband and I had both been vaccinated. It proceeded to make me very sick, but we had both been vaccinated. And so even then I remember thinking, wait, I made this decision, but my neighbor loses their job if they don't make the same health decision as me. And I just remember that was kind of a turning point in at least making me open to to going, okay, wait a second. Like, what does this mean? What is this slippery slope of, you know, just liberty encroachment that we're on? And that just kind of put me on a path and kind of snowballed into really me, like I said before, developing a taste for, I was like, I'm going to take a break from media. I'm not going to look at any media. My husband stopped watching Fox News. I stopped watching CNN. Mm-hmm. We both took that break together because I told my husband, I was like, I just need time. Like these are very triggering times, especially for a married couple at odds politically. I just need some time and space to kind of take a break from media and figure things out in my own time. And slowly but surely, as I also started to kind of heal spiritually, I found, I was like, oh, I can read a story and it doesn't send me into a panic attack. This is amazing. And so I started looking at white papers and research and listening to 3-hour long podcasts, which are really, I think, much more illuminating than, you know, a 20-second story on CBS This Morning can really give you as far as insight into that issue. And I just started learning and equipping myself with knowledge at that time, just to know, like, what are we going to do with our kids when this trickles down to being offered to our children? What are we going to do when this turns into repeated dosing? What are we going to do? So it really started there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, sure. And that, like I said, since 2020 and the pandemic, so many people that I've heard and come across and spoken to have just like opened their eyes completely as to what's going on. Like my world is just completely shattered. Everything I believe is not the truth. Now, I want to backtrack, not your story, but I want to kind of incorporate something you said into a story that I thought. So we mentioned offline that I'm from Chicago. Okay.
Yeah.
And so my story that I'm going to share here starts in 2016.
Okay.
2016.
I remember that year.
Okay. I don't know if you're a baseball fan or not, but 2016 was the year the Cubs won the World Series.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now there was a saying in Chicago that the Cubs won't win the World Series until hell freezes over. Now, why do I say that? Because in 2016, well, A, I was at the bottom. I was at the beginning of that year. I was at the lowest point of my own life. Mm-hmm. And I met my wife that year. So I started going uphill. But that year, the Cubs won the World Series was the same year that the election of Donald Trump happened. The Cubs won the World Series. And in my opinion, hell froze over and the world has never been the same.
Never.
The reason why I say that is because now I don't want to be offensive here, but the word has been Trump derangement syndrome. Are you familiar with that word?
Yes.
Okay. So the reason why I say that, again, not making light of you because we all come from different paths, but you mentioned that you were devastated when he got elected and your whole world crashed and it drove you into an alcoholic frenzy. You got drunk. And I don't know why, but so many people in this world just like freaked out when he got elected. Right. And then we saw the political, just like everything in politics just kind of. Now, look, there's much to be desired of that man. I'm not praising him in any way or not. I'm not a supporter myself. I didn't vote for him. I didn't vote for Hillary. I don't believe in that whole game. But I just, as an observer, I just noticed that so many people just like, they got so politically divided since 2016. Yeah. And then it culminated in 2020 with the election and the pandemic and the government just kind of honed in and everything. And it's so shocking to me that, you know, that's why I say this is apocalyptic. Time that we're living in. So many people have, you know, analyzed, okay, whether they are on the right and they're, you know, a Trump supporter or they're on the left and they just hated the man. Like the country has been so divided since that time. And then the government has just kind of come down and put pressure on everybody. They've mandated vaccines that they've never done. They've, you know, taken everyone liberty away. And so many people's eyes have been opened that I think many people have had this spiritual awakening because they're like, we can't rely on these systems anymore.
Right.
So we're going to focus on other things. I mean, and your story kind of is reminds me of that same process.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you something on that note that more recently blew my mind. And I shouldn't say that anymore because something blows my mind every day and I shouldn't be surprised anymore, but I always am. I think in retrospect, I think that, and from what I've learned, I think that Trump was a strategy gone wrong for the Democrats as well. We look back and we know how the Clinton campaign really, you know, they squashed Bernie Sanders in the process. But really, we're still in this environment where on the one hand, You have the Democratic Party speaking out of one side of their mouth against MAGA Republicans and, you know, this extreme right Republicanism, you know, and Biden even going in his, you know, address to the nation saying how dangerous that is. Well, on the other side of the mouth, the Democratic Party is funding far-right campaigns, primary campaigns, to try to make sure that the most extreme Republican wins that campaign, because in the hopes that they're going to be easier to beat in the general elections. And, you know, some are fine with that. Some think, you know, it's just a strategy. And I come from a marketing and advertising background. And so it's less about, for a lot of people, the means and more about the ends, and do they justify that? But I think that's a dangerous game to play, because I think there's a whole set of Americans that if you give them, you know, two options and say prop up extreme right Republicanism, I think we've seen a whole group of Americans say, okay, fine, then I'm going to back this guy and I'm going to back this political ideology, because at least they're doing X, Y, and Z, which are the things I care about. And, you know, a lot of people who, and some of them are in my community and in my family, who are willing to kind of discard a lot of what I would consider to be kind of negative aspects of Trump, because they're, you know, banking on, well, at least he's going to do this, at least he's going to do this. And I'm with you. I think that, in my humble opinion, now that I'm able to actually look at the 4 years Trump was in office more objectively, maybe not totally objectively, but more so in the past, I'm able to see that I think he was effective in getting some things done that he said he was going to get done. In the process, you know, I think we sacrificed a little bit of unity and just like old school getting along, because he did speak in very inflammatory ways and ways that were personally offensive to me at times. And I didn't agree with all of his policy decisions, but I think that we're in this environment where I think it behooves the Democrat Party, the liberal kind of agenda, to give us an option so far on the other side of the spectrum that people really feel forced to choose between two vastly different parties right now. Right. There's not a lot of middle ground, it seems.
And you mentioned like sound clips, right? That's how media is driven. Modern media is driven by 20-second, 30-second bits that give you only a partial truth. But, you know, podcasting, I think, has exploded since that time too. And you listen to a 3-hour podcast and you just, like, many people's eyes have just been completely open. Like, I don't understand where this information is, whether it's true or not. And I think what I read in one of your profiles is that you had many friends and families who were, like, this is a common theme, like, over the last couple of years, that if you were one side or the other, like, you saw the other person as completely deranged, completely, like, out of their mind, are their values even corresponding with mine? And it's because they've only been exposed to 20-second clips or 30-second clips, and mostly not even the correct information.
Yeah, and there's this phenomenon. I don't know if there's some kind of psychological phenomena here or what it is, but there seems to be, when you're affiliated and that's what you're listening to. That's one of the things my husband learned when we took a media break, is we were like, we are literally hearing different things all the time. Like, you hear one thing, I hear a completely different thing about completely different issues or the same issues. And I think there's this tendency to, when you hear, like, even, you know, a snippet of what seems to sound like it's coming from the other side, for this immediate wall to go up. And healthy curiosity is gone, you know, because you're automatically like, this is the enemy. This is not real information. This is misinformation. This is wrong. And you're constantly thinking about, you know, how to counter that rather than really listening with some healthy curiosity and kind of internalizing it and then deciding for yourself. I think some good old fashioned listening skills really needed,
right,
and a healthy kind of skepticism, really.
Sure.
Now, because I still, you know, I'll read headlines from the Washington Post and the New York Post, and I approach them both with the same kind of skepticism and curiosity. Just because I want to decide for myself, and I want to see what's really going on. And everybody has an agenda.
Well, right, exactly. You know, what's interesting, you say agenda, because at the beginning you mentioned that you were raised like in a conservative family, you were raised Republican, and at some point in your life you said, this isn't right either. How did that go down? I mean, obviously you mentioned you live in Tennessee and you're kind of from the Midwest South area, you know, that's very conservative Republican territory. They might call it MAGA country, right?
Absolutely.
But yeah. Your views have changed since the time you were young till, you know, at some point now you became more leftist liberal, and we can get, you know, start from there and kind of see how they change back again.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. So I'm in Nashville, which is a bit of a blue pocket surrounded by red of Tennessee. And I kind of grew up in a similar, maybe not quite as blue, but I grew up in Northwest Arkansas, a little town called Springdale. Like 70 something percent of the population of Springdale was Mexican immigrant population. I went to the University of Arkansas. So there's a university, Walmart is headquartered there. So there's a lot of corporate transplant, a lot of people from your neck of the woods.
Sure.
Work for Walmart or Walmart suppliers. So it's an interesting blend of like corporate, university, old school hippies. Like it's a really interesting mix of people. My family, had moved there. They were from more of the South. My great grandmother like lived on a cotton plantation until the day she died. Like I come from those roots, and my grandfather was, until he died a year ago, he was a Pentecostal preacher my whole life. And I was born into a lot of violence. My parents, which a lot of us, you know, we know that what doesn't get healed gets passed along in some way. My parents came from their own just tremendously traumatic backgrounds. But they did pass that along. I was the firstborn, and I, at a couple months old, went to live in a women's shelter with my mom. I just witnessed for things. And then unfortunately my dad was in the military and he served in Desert Storm. And during the time he was gone, I served as my mom's punching bag. She was going through a bit of a mental health crisis at the time. And, I, you know, would have at times whelps covering my backside. And just a lot of really mixed, confusing messages. I'll tell you a quick anecdote, because I think it's important to kind of understand the mindset that I went through life with. I remember going to church and the Sunday school teachers, you know, because I was raised in the Pentecostal church. And I remember they were telling us about the beating and crucifixion of Jesus, you know, in a way that you would to children. And they, you know, mentioned, they're like, and he was beaten on his backside. You know, I think you see like kind of a picture, like mildly put, of like the lashes on, lash marks on Jesus. And they said, I mean, can you imagine, has anyone else ever been beaten like that? And I just raised my hand nonchalantly, like, yeah, me too. Like, I get it. I feel you, Jesus. And not understanding that the question was rhetorical. And later the family must've talked to my parents, and later my parents sat me down and explained to me how what was happening to me was punishment and discipline. And the difference is, beating is when you beat someone that you don't love. And discipline comes from a place of love. And God commands parents to do that to their children. And I, long story short, I remember having to go into the church and in front of my entire extended family, and this entire family apologized to them for lying to them. And that's just something I really internalized, and it was reinforced. You know, I had night terrors, and I would, you know, switch on the lights in the middle of the night screaming. And then my mom would ask, why did you turn on all the lights? And I would deny it because I didn't want to get beaten. And so the narrative became in my family, Tamara's a liar, Tamara's a liar, Tamara's a liar.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I really internalized that. I actually believed that I was just inherently a liar, and that my version of reality was just some warped, dramatic version. And really what was happening is I was living with strict parents and I didn't like it. And so I really convinced myself of that. And I operated throughout life with, you know, compliance. My little brother was born when I was 6 years old, and my life completely changed. Our family life got pretty normal after that, honestly. The abuse stopped. Our life was pretty good after that. My parents did some, they were just in a better place after that point. And so I kind of just treated what happened prior, like in the first 6 years of my life, as like, it's over. It can't be trauma because it ended, right? Trauma is something like, if these people do these things to you over and over again, and you know, what happened to me was discipline, and that's it. And it was all kind of in the name of God. really, okay. In my mind, at least. Nobody ever sat me down and said, God, you know, wants me to beat you. But I really just kind of, in my child's mind, those two things were very conflated. And so I had a very distorted picture of God.
Sure. And you feel that you repressed a lot of that stuff. You know, obviously you said life got better or changed at age six. There was a period of time until you became an adult where you convinced yourself that, you were a liar, you weren't accurately seeing the events that transpired in your life. And you conflated what love and discipline was. Do you feel like that was something that you repressed and maybe that led to your depression in adulthood and alcoholism that way?
I think so. It's hard to know, you know, because this is just the only story I've lived. It's the only life I've lived. But I did. I do remember my little brother and I were just actually talking about a lot of this and talking about how he and I, in large part, experienced the exact same events in our childhood after the point that he was born, but we experienced them in very different ways. Okay. I always felt a sense of being on edge. I hated being at home. I performed very well in school. I, you know, got a near perfect score on my ACTs and a full academic ride to college. I wanted to get out. I excelled in sports and school, and those were my safe places, even church. We at a certain time started going to kind of a mega church in the area, Baptist church, and those are my outlets. And that's how I remember my childhood. But yes, I absolutely repressed it. I think what's funny now is after, because listen, I was always very compliant and rule following. I had my first drink on my 21st birthday. And it was a pina colada at the Olive Garden.
Right on.
My drinking career really didn't start until about a year out of college.
Okay.
And I, through circumstances, my family had moved away. I was kind of thrust into like the kind of weekend party culture for the first time ever. You know, most people started experiencing it in college.
Yeah.
And I got a little bit of a late start, but I remember when I got drunk for the first time, it felt, if I'm being totally honest, it felt like I could breathe for the first time.
Mm.
It felt like just complete relief and I could be myself. I didn't feel pressure to perform. I didn't feel judged. I just felt free. And, I hung on to that feeling and I, you know, drank that way. I always drank to excess, just didn't become a daily habit until a little bit later in my 20s. But that was really, it was one way that I felt like I was like, you know, I was raised to think that drinking was a sin and, you know,
how
if you drink. And I just, when I hit that point in adulthood, it was at this time that I was like, they lied to me. Everything they said is bad is good. Everything they said is good is really bad. I swore off church. I didn't want to be a part of church. I didn't want anything to do with, you know, Christianity in the religious sense. I always maintained this just inner knowing that God was there. I didn't really know who God was really, because I thought, you know, I know he's there. I believe that, you know, ultimately there's got to be something more to this life. But I really had so much baggage in between me and that kind of sense of God that I had to ultimately clear out.
That makes perfect sense now, obviously, you know, having the upbringing that you had. And then when you get to adulthood, you just, I mean, I no longer drink myself. I wouldn't call myself an alcoholic, but I had my youth and I would drink. And obviously that feeling of being drunk, you start thinking about things that maybe are kind of lodged in the back of your mind and you start thinking of things differently, especially when we get to young adulthood. So your story now tells me, okay, I understand you were raised in an environment and it wasn't the best of circumstances. And then you related those circumstances to conservatism, to republicanism, and they were evil and they were bad, and so that you shifted your political leaning from the right to the left. So that paints a very demonstrative picture of where you're coming from. Now fast forward to the Trump years that we kind of already covered a little bit. At some point in time you're like, wait a minute, I have a problem with alcoholism and I don't think I'm getting told the truth in politics.
Yes.
So you have another awakening. Now, I think all of us go through these stages in our lives where you think one way and then something happens, whether it's traumatic or just circumstantial, you know, I'm going to change my paradigm, if you would, from one to another. And for you, you said it was having a family, having kids, realizing that, you know, your husband, then your boyfriend, he thought differently, but you didn't think bad about him. You just tried to understand why he thought so differently. His worldview was so different than you. And a culmination of all that stuff kind of brought you to this point. I think in 2020, you know, like I said earlier, that just was a nail in the coffin for so many people. And it was this COVID vaccine or this COVID virus. I guess I don't really care if YouTube shuts me off or not, but I'll say what I have to, right? You know, so COVID and everybody just, you know, being forced to do something and being awakened to truth. I mean, so at that point in time, you're just like, I don't think that even my left leaning is correct anymore. And so now you're recovering from that too. I think that's amazing.
It feels amazing. And the reason there are such parallels, because they may seem like they don't go together at all. So what, you've recovered from alcoholism and found God and you shifted your political opinions. The reason they're on such parallel tracks, I think, is I really got in touch with my gut. And I what I would call the Holy Spirit, you know, that's how I feel it. I think we all do have God-given brains and God-given gut instincts. Now, getting in touch with my gut was never really possible. I was forced as a child to ignore my gut, you know, and suppress my feelings, not be angry, not be sad. You all have to always smile. But I did that all throughout adulthood too. And I think that we are systematically taught, I mean, entering motherhood really brought this to the forefront, is we are taught systematically that your gut instinct is of what to do as a parent comes as a distant second to what the experts tell you to do. And I felt that so hard when I got pregnant. And I have great things to say. I think the medical community is filled with really wonderful people who, for the most part, want to do good. Those are the medical professionals I've known. I don't know about you. At the same time, I would feel at certain points, like, I don't feel like this is necessary and this doesn't quite feel right, but I would just have this sense I need to be compliant and I need to obey because I don't know best. They know best. And so I think there's this kind of systematic, undercutting of our gut instincts as humans that it's really this lost art. And especially as we're more triggered and polarized, it's like learning how to get in touch with my gut, which is something I had to do to really heal from trauma and heal old wounds and forgive and reconnect with people, even people who had hurt me in the past. Yeah. It was like this beautiful unfolding in my life of like the power of forgiveness and the power of compassion and just how like God really can work miracles and restore things that you thought were totally dead. Yeah. I experienced that to like the nth degree in my life. And I feel like the same kind of being in tune with my gut instincts ended up kind of slowly translating to my politics too. I just thought, okay, this isn't right. I don't know yet what this means about like what I call myself, like politically. I don't know yet like what's the term for this and what I'm feeling. I just know that my gut is steering me in this direction. And I'm going to, instead of, you know, being whipped back into shape by some system of experts telling me what to do, I'm going to follow my gut and I'm going to go where that leads me. And ultimately that's where I've learned that I can rest my head at night and know like today I made the right decisions for my family.
So at what point did you think that's okay? You have this gut feeling and you know, it's different than what the experts are saying. You know, was it something that you heard on a podcast? Was it like some kind of news story that you said, I think that they're lying to us. I think that they're not telling us truth, that they may not be the experts they're claiming to be. I mean, was there a specific event? It was just kind of a culmination of things.
Really? I mean, one of the biggest ways was through my health journey. I think I mentioned I was really sick for a while. Okay. I got vaccinated early on and I of course had the kind of sick kind of viral reactions that everybody has felt like I had, you know, just a really bad cold for a couple of days. And then I just kept getting recurring infections over and over and over again. I spent the better part of my pregnancy with my second baby sick. I was in the hospital giving labor sick. I was postpartum and I was sick. I was just constantly sick with some respiratory, viruses or infections of some kind. You know, sometimes I would get tested, sometimes I wouldn't. but I just got tired of being sick. And what I was told and where I was, I knew something was going on that was a little bit more than like what the doctors were telling you, which is, oh, you're pregnant, your immune system's weak. Oh, you just gave birth, your immune system's weak. That pregnancy and having a baby take a toll on your immune system, but I just felt like something was up. And I pushed my primary care doctor on it because I was like, I'm just sick of being sick all the time. It's really hard to raise two babies under 2 years old when you're sick all the time.
Yeah.
And I got a blood panel done, just a basic blood panel. And there were some concerning things there. So then I had to see some specialists, then get another blood panel. Then the numbers that were off last time were totally normal, but then other levels worked totally off. And so it actually got for a brief period of time kind of scary. And the advice was, well, go get a chest x-ray, go see an ENT, go see a throat specialist. Like there were all of these different specialists I needed to see. And I just thought, you know, wait, I'm going to pause and do my own research. And I just had an inclination that the spike protein in the COVID shot was, because I honestly got vaccinated thinking it works like any other vaccine.
Like, right.
You're immunized, right? So to learn that that's not the technology, it's a very different technology, to learn that it actually becomes more and more toxic in repeated doses, to learn that it can really wreck your immune system. Maybe it's rare, but it does happen. I have another friend who, a real life human being friend I went to college with, she's my age, and she had a stroke after her first dose, 2 days after her first dose. Massive stroke. And I asked her, I said, I didn't want to pry at the time, but I asked her much later. I said, I know because she posted it on Instagram, and then she had a stroke 2 days later. Massive stroke. And I said, did the doctors, like, did they think it might have been related to your COVID shot? And she said, they didn't even ask. Nobody asked or looked into it. It didn't get reported that way. And so I just, when I started kind of understanding the real like reporting mechanisms, and that as rare as something may be relatively, if it happens, like I still want to know about it as a parent who you're telling me pretty soon, I'm going to have to consider giving this to my children. You know, we were starting to think about, are we going to be able to send them to school? Like if we don't, what's our comfort level? Are we going to continue to get jabbed? The obvious answer for me was no, but I ended up seeing an alternative medicine doctor. He does functional and regenerative medicine.
Oh, okay.
Okay. I've come to be very passionate about. I really sure. did it strongly. And he put me on a protocol just of supplements and teas, a bunch of supplements and a protocol to detox essentially from the spike protein as best I could. I went on that for a month, and I haven't been, like right now I'm struggling with allergies. This is the worst I felt since then. I haven't been sick since then. Our whole family's been just healthier as we've gotten on just more natural kind of, natural solutions to just kind of keep our house as toxin free as possible.
And, sure.
Yeah.
Sure. So do you think that the events that transpired after the vaccination came out, do you think that that was, just mistakes that were made by these pharmaceutical institutions, or do you think there was something more nefarious behind it?
I don't know. I try my best because sometimes when I'm looking at all of the information, I'm going, really, the only conclusion to draw is this is for some nefarious purpose. So I will tell you two things I believe that seem at odds, but can be true at the same time. I promise. It's a dialectic. Okay. I believe I try to approach everything as if kind of benefit of the doubt type of approach. Let's just assume that they didn't know. Let's just assume that there's no ulterior motive here. At the same time, I do see that when you're talking about especially big pharma, big medical, big insurance, their number one goal is quarterly earnings. It is all about quarterly earnings. And quarterly earnings and profit, those things aren't bad. But when these are systems that ultimately dictate how healthy we are as a country, I mean, our outcomes are poor. Our outcomes are awful. We have the highest maternal death rates, highest infant mortality rates of any developed country. That's insane. And yet still we're supposed to be the most developed, like, you know, forward thinking nation over here.
Sure.
Yeah. I think there's something just inherently corrupt about systems that make our health decisions for us in a major way, They tell us what's covered by insurance. They tell us which medicines we can take. They tell us, you know, which medicines are good. They tell us whichever side effects they do or don't want to tell us. They dictate the narrative. They are the quote unquote experts. And, you know, one would want to believe that they ultimately have our best interest at heart. But the reality that we have to open our eyes to is they have quarterly earnings top of mind. That is the number one priority, even in crazy, you know, cases like the case of Vioxx, which killed at least 50,000 people. They were given what, a $3 billion judgment, which sounds like a large sum of money, but they profited $12 billion. So
yeah, exactly.
That happens over and over and over again. They always come on top. We're in a situation now with the COVID vaccines that they have no liability, ultimately. So we're in a very precarious spot. And I try to approach things as I'll give the benefit of the doubt. I'll also recognize and open my eyes to the reality of the potential motives that are nefarious.
Sure.
But
sure.
Ultimately, it really doesn't matter why. It matters that I know what is happening so that I can make decisions with that. So yeah, I like to kind of spend, you know, getting into their heads and thinking of why. If it's good motives, bad motives, I try to assume the best because it just doesn't matter. I just want to know what.
Oh, I think that's the best way to look at it. But, you know, going back to the political winds that blow in this country, obviously the vaccination came out under President Trump. And then we had all the leftists saying, well, no matter what he does, because he is, you know, he's him, he's a Republican, I'm not going to take that thing. Right. And then Biden gets the leftists and like everyone has right now. And so it's become very political, which the nefariousness of this whole thing, because it's not just about it is about profits, like you mentioned, in certain industries, but now it's become a very extremely political point of view. And it's like, okay, are you left or are you right, and does that matter because of this? Because now you got people online saying, oh, you know, I took it or I didn't take it, and all of a sudden you're labeled, oh, you're on the right or you're on the left, or you're going to go back and vote for this guy. It's like this very thing, whether it's driven by profits or not, is dividing us politically. And it's crazy.
Yeah. And it's not good. It's because you're right. It's profit, but it's also power. I do suspect, I don't know this for a fact, but I do suspect that with a lot of these issues we've had through the pandemic that have become politicized, oddly enough, highly politicized, I do think that there is a larger general goal of the left to centralize power, to centralize, you know, money in that process. Mm-hmm. And I think that the best way to do that is to weaken our economy, take away some of our choices, make us more reliant on government support. And we've seen that. I just think we would be naive to think that we're immune to that in the US. What's happened in history, like the rise of, I hate to even say this word, but the rise of Nazism came out of economic, really dire economic times, hyperinflation, a lot of polarization. And they got two options, you know, Nazism and then Stalin. Like neither of them were good options. They were polarizing options. But I think that we're headed generally in the wrong direction. And I like to be an optimist, so I don't want to sound depressing when I say that.
Sure, sure.
I think the good news in that is that it can be a turning point for ordinary people like us to just rise up and talk about some of the things we're learning. I talk about things I don't know a lot about, and I talk about things I've researched a ton because I want to open the door to conversations. If you want to tell me I'm wrong about something, tell me I'm wrong about something. Like, let's have these conversations and just talk to each other and stop this cycle of falling prey to one side or the other.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you mentioned it, because I was going to ask about your podcast next. Obviously, Recovering Liberal, it sounds like you just want to be informed. And it sounds to me like it doesn't really matter, you know, one side or the other to you. You just want to make the right decisions for your family. But yet you still call it Recovering Liberal. So are there some other political things that you've changed your mind on over the last couple of years?
Yeah, I think most of where I've spent my focus has been in things that have been born out of the pandemic. So medical systems, things like that. Yeah, I've changed my perspective on just, I don't think that this is specific to liberalism, but just how corrupt politicians can be. I think that we have a massive kind of incestuous system where people are accepting money from companies they're supposed to be regulating. Mm. Then, you know, they set the regulation and you know, for example, 12 out of the last 15 FDA directors have gone to work for the pharmaceutical company or big medical that they've been regulating.
Yeah, that's crazy.
So I think that there's just a system there that lends itself to a lot of corruption. I have changed my position drastically on guns, to be honest with you. Mm. I now carry a gun with me almost everywhere I go. I'm in, you know, I go to places like Walmart and the park and the gas station with my children. I stay at home with my two girls most of the time. And so I carry a gun with me now, and I've really changed my position on, you know, I used to be staunchly for gun control. And then I found out what gun control means and what a slippery slope it is and how it tends to take away ordinary people's ability to legally access firearms and safely. Yeah. Yeah. While leaving the criminal community untouched. So my position has changed there too. There's an episode on it. I don't know if I want to go, you want me to go a lot into it here, but
no. But, well, that's cool. I mean, and I do appreciate you sharing your story, because the last couple episodes I've had people share stories of just extremely traumatic experiences in their life and some very poor decisions they made that just kind of took them down a rabbit hole, but then they've been able to find redemption. And sometimes it's an inward thing that causes that change. Sometimes it's an outward thing. And I think for you, it's kind of both. It was having a family and just like the world, it just doesn't make sense anymore.
Absolutely.
So, you know, for me, like I said, I've kind of shied away from politics and gone more towards spiritual avenues. Now, I want to wrap up here a second, but you know, you started with saying that you were raised in a more Christian conservative family. You had this this life transforming event. Are you heading more towards the spiritual side of things now? Do you see yourself more in tune with spiritual things?
The one common thread in my life, the one constant, the one thing I'm sure about is my faith. That is what has allowed me to have a new life, to be in this position, to help other people when I can, to change my mind about things, to raise a family. I think that through healing, I have been able to, thank God, kind of, I mentioned before that I kind of threw out the baby with the bathwater, to recognize there were beautiful parts of my childhood, that there were beautiful things that I learned that might have been distorted and twisted by my circumstances, but are still true. And I can recognize that, as cheesy as this sounds, you've probably heard it before, but I can recognize that God never left me, that God was right there with me, and my story was playing out exactly the way it needed to, even when I was like in the depths of darkness. I really thought that my life was over. I knew my life was over, and it wasn't over. And so everything I do now, as weird as it sounds, I just kind of step into with purpose and with intention, and just trust God in the process, that, you know, there's a reason for all of this as it unfolds.
Awesome. Awesome. If you could leave any kind of advice for the listeners, what would you say?
I would say it's that you're never too far gone, ever. And with that, it's that you can always change your mind. You have the God-given right to change your mind. You really can. So stay open. Try not to make judgments about people. I'll just tell one quick, it's a thing I saw on Instagram. It was from somebody I really love and respect. And she was talking about gun control. And she said, we're in this position because we care more about the Second Amendment than second graders. Mm. Which is a really powerful statement, but I'm just using that as an example, because I was on the other side of that post, like gutted, like she thinks that because I don't think this is the proper way to go about gun control and gun rights, that I don't agree with these specific policies, that I must care more about guns than children. So don't get sucked into moral pejoratives, like try to look past that and really see the person behind it. For example, the person behind that is a wonderful, beautiful person who really just cares about what's happening, just like I do. We're all more the same than we are different. I really believe that.
Great, great. Okay, well, thank you. Do you have anything you want to plug other than your podcast? Maybe you can say the name of that one more time.
No, that's it. It's The Recovering Liberal. I'm on YouTube and all popular podcast platforms.
Awesome. All right, one last question for you, Tamara. Ooh. Are you Invictus?
I'm afraid I am, by the grace of God. Yes.
By the grace of God. Amen. I want to thank you for your time. This has been a great conversation. I think that many people will agree that you do have the right and the privilege to change your mind. And I hope that all of us will change our mind from time to time, because it makes life much more interesting. So.
Absolutely. I appreciate you taking the time with me, Mike. I've enjoyed
it. No problem. Stick around in the line and we'll chat for a second here. Okay. Right. But thanks. Perfect.